Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Welcome to the Kickoff. I've got Kevin Kilbane here as well. How are you, sir?
I'm very good, Cathal. Yeah, all is good. Not bad at all.
Good man. Look, we'll start the show. We don't have to reveal your age, but a big, huge, happy birthday. You had your birthday during the week. You kept that quiet last week.
I don't care about my age. Yeah, when you reach the age that I'm at, then you have to start to keep things quiet. You know how it is. So let's just say I'm chapping on the door of 50 very, very loudly right now. So yeah, the next one is the big 5-0. So yes. I'm 49. Yeah, 49.
Ah, you're looking fresh. You're looking fresh for a man who's nearly 50. Late 40s, that's what you say. What age? Yeah, I'm in
late 40s. Yeah,
yeah.
Am I officially middle-aged now? That's what I need to know. I think when you hit 40, you're middle-aged, but I'm definitely middle-aged now, I tell you.
And it's a busy week in your house, is it? There's birthdays all around.
It is. My birthday, the 1st of February. My wife, Brianne, on the 2nd of February. And then our daughter, Olivia, on the 3rd of February. Yeah, so we have 3 days. I don't know how it's fallen like that, but yeah, it's crazy stuff. Olivia was meant to be born on my birthday, but it turned out then that she came out on the 3rd. And yeah, so the 3 days, you know, I kind of prefer it that way. I don't really like to celebrate my birthday now. I don't need to celebrate it. It's all geared towards my wife and my daughter, so it's great.
Okay, yeah, so you kind of hide in the background. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, something like that, yeah.
Maybe not next year. There might be a big old party for you.
I don't want one, that's the thing. But God, we'll see what happens, you know. I don't like these surprise carry-ons, you know, so we'll see.
Well, let's talk a bit of football. So that's your comfort zone, is talking football, not planning birthday parties.
Can you not sense I'm getting a bit more tense when you're talking about me for 5 minutes or so? Let's move on quickly.
Okay, on we go. Is this it now? Are Arsenal just going to win the league? It looks like City had another chance. They had another chance 2-0 up against Tottenham. And what did they do? They fell and got a point out of it against Tottenham, but Arsenal now 6 points clear. Looked pretty good against Leeds, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, they've looked good, haven't they, in general? You know, even in the cup against Chelsea last week as well. They've had that. They've obviously dominated the Champions League with no issues at all going through Champions League. So rightly, they're in the position they're in. They're one of, if not the favourite for the Champions League. Of course, favourites for the Premier League. The old thing's going to keep getting thrown at them, Carl, isn't it? That they're not great to watch, and they haven't been great to watch. I don't think it's been a great Premier League season. I think there's many that have suggested that. I feel that, genuinely do feel that. But I feel as though that there is a way that Arsenal maybe have found that maybe Arteta felt over a long period that he couldn't compete with Manchester City playing a certain brand of football, that he would always be undone eventually. So they've had to find different ways to win. And I'm all for that because, you know, having played in a lot of sides that would not have been able to play open, attractive football, you've got to find ways to win a game, grind a result if you can. I think Arsenal have that. But they've also got quality that maybe goes, I wouldn't say unnoticed, but certainly it's underappreciated at times with Arsenal, that the quality that they've actually got throughout the team. I just think it's just that this clean sheet record that they've got and the lack of goals that they actually have conceded across this season, it's maybe used as a stick to beat them with, which I find crazy because Arteta has found a way to win games and put themselves in the driving seat. So it is theirs to lose in answer to that question. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this actually because, you know, we were saying that, I was saying that it's like two drunk lads running for a taxi and they both keep stumbling. And, you know, it's not going to be a league where there's going to be a points record broken and people say that, the quality of the Premier League isn't as good this year. But maybe it is. Maybe just every team can beat each other and that's what might, it's just a different type of league. But also, Arsenal are carrying a lot of baggage, aren't they? Because there is the thought, and I suppose the maybe you can answer this, because does this seep into a dressing room even subconsciously, but the thought that they haven't won it in over 20 years, does that kind of stuff seep in? And, you know, oh, they'll fall at the last hurdle. Didn't they do it already that they led for the season and then they gave it up at the very end? Those kind of things surely seep in.
It can, absolutely can, because the message is coming externally, isn't it? I think the one thing that Arteta has consistently spoken about fixing that dressing room first and foremost, and getting maybe into the heads of all the players. And psychologically, I'm sure that this message has been getting to the players, and whether they, I'm sure they would have absolutely been using psychologists and mind coaches and things like this to try to lead that dressing room to. It's not a case of even forgetting about what's happened in the past, but it's almost about trying to use that and what's happened in the past. And you know, whenever you know the term about taking each game as it comes, and everybody always talk about that. But if you have that mindset that Arsenal, look, they lost to Man United a few weeks ago, and they weren't in a great run of form, you can quickly, you know, park that if. You're starting to look forward and just focusing solely on that next game. It's done. What can we do? What can we change about that? We focus on the next game, get the 3 points, and then everything changes. I mean, sport in general, everything can change within a week as it is. But I think that's where Arteta has really come into his own and trying to become fully focused on the next game. Whatever's happened has happened. And I think the best managers, whatever sport we're playing, always do that, that you have to park those defeats quickly, use them, you know, have them in your mind and move forward. And I think that's the case just in general historically. And I think we referenced it a couple of weeks ago, even going back to Qatar, when Arsenal, the Qatar World Cup, when Arsenal were in such a great position going into that Qatar World Cup, and it probably messed them up going into it. They don't have that distraction now. So I feel as though that Arsenal, I don't think they're going to concede a hatful of goals week in, week out. I think we all accept that. I know they've, you know, recently they have been conceding goals more so than they were earlier on this season. But I feel as though I think they're in a good position. I do. And yeah, there's to lose and everything like that. But I do feel as though that as we're starting to see even with Arsenal now, I think Arsenal are actually scoring more goals than they were maybe a month ago. I think that'll start to happen where teams will be a little bit more open against Arsenal, and Arsenal will be able to pick them apart a little bit easier in the last 20, 30 minutes of game. So, look, I think they are absolutely the strongest side. I think defensively they're the best. Maybe it's a fair argument to say that in the final third, they probably don't have the best players in the Premier League or even Europe for the Champions League. But if you're making your base... Or the baseline for Arsenal is let's not concede and see where we go. That can only bode well for them going on for the rest of this season. And I think that is going to be the mindset of Arteta, his staff, and the players going forward. So, as I said, I don't think they're going to ship a hatful of goals, Carl. I think they're going to be in great positions in every game. Obviously, they're probably going to lose one or two before the end of the season, but I don't think it's going to be enough for the other teams to catch them.
Cream always rises to the top, and the Carabao Cup finalists were confirmed during the week as well. So Arsenal and City both play on March the 22nd in Wembley. So there is a sign that they are the two strongest teams, whether they're the greatest, you know, because maybe that's it. Maybe we've been spoiled with some just unbelievable quality over the last couple of seasons with Liverpool and City's great runs, and the amount of points that they were able to tot up during a season. Look at the cup final. It's those two teams, the top two teams in the Premier League. Yeah. So, you know, they are the two best teams really, aren't they?
I think so. I think Arsenal are better. Do Arsenal have more quality? That's an argument that anyone can make. Maybe I don't believe they do have more quality throughout that side, but City have had a lot of injuries. Arsenal have had injuries in the last few seasons that's ultimately cost them. So if Arsenal keep a majority of their team fit, I think they're going to have too much for City. But just in terms of that, saying that maybe we've been spoiled, I think not just the last few seasons, I think we've been spoiled for a long time now. Since Guardiola came to the Premier League and Klopp's been in the Premier League, the standard that City and Liverpool got to, you know, Liverpool came second in the league. Did they get 100 points or something, four or five years ago, whenever it was? That standard now is probably not going to be met again for a number of years, because sides consistently would find it near impossible. If you look historically across top division football in England, whether it's Premier League, the old First Division, sides didn't do that. Sides weren't able to dominate like City had dominated, like Liverpool dominated as well. So I think how freaky it was over the last 10 seasons, that maybe is something that maybe you look at in isolation now across history. Maybe we might get back to a bit of normality where sides winning a Premier League title are going to lose four and five, six games possibly across the course of a season, because maybe you mentioned it earlier on, you referenced it, the quality overall, and I think you probably know this watching it, Carl, the quality of the Premier League in general is way better than it was even when I was playing across the board. Look, people have the preferences whether they prefer it or not, but I think the quality of the bottom half teams is way more than it was when I was playing. It absolutely is. And they're easily able to compete on a more even keel than the sides were when I was playing. When I was playing, it was more of a grind. If you're going to get a result, you have to grind the result out. And I think there is a case of that now, but there's also a lot more quality within the league as well, that within those bottom tier sides where they can open teams up with real quality. So I noticed that. I absolutely do notice that. But yeah, just going back to the original point, top two sides in England absolutely are City and Arsenal. I think Arsenal are shading it right now. And it's going to be a good final in that Carabao Cup because of that. I think that the Carabao Cup probably has become almost better than the FA Cup in the last 15, 20 years. I think the midweek games definitely helps that sides can actually, have those night games, focus on the two-leg semi-finals or whatever it be when it gets to quarter-finals and final. And the final has become a real showpiece, I think, for English football recently.
You can see how much it meant to the Newcastle fans last season. It was just incredible. I watched it in a pub in Cashel because it was on around St. Patrick's weekend. So I was down home in Tip watching it. And the amount of fans, Newcastle fans that I never knew were like lads in the pub that I never knew were Newcastle fans, but you certainly knew they were that day. Lads walking in with their Newcastle jerseys. It was like, you've been a Newcastle fan all this time. Because usually you just see the Liverpool and the United and the Arsenal lads going around on a Saturday or Sunday with their jersey.
There's a reason why the Newcastle jersey has not been shown too much. That's what it is. Newcastle, whichever fan, if you're not Liverpool, Man United in the last 25 years or whoever it will be, Arsenal maybe to an extent, you keep that quiet that you're a Newcastle fan, a Sunderland fan, or whoever it would be. Even Leeds fans, when I was a kid, I used to remember going when I was over in Ireland when I was younger. So many Leeds fans, and I always feel as though that Leeds fans, you didn't see as many of them for the last 15, 20 years. Now in the last, not up until the last couple of years, now all of a sudden I'm seeing Leeds fans everywhere again. So it's hard when you're a fan of those sides and you're not getting the results that you want and you're dropping out of the top leagues and things like that. But yeah, two huge clubs. I think you know that. Well, Newcastle are massive anyway, yeah.
I was just surprised. You'd forget, like, some of the more peculiar ones you might know of. Like, I know that there's a couple of Coventry fans in Cashel, so it stands out a small bit. And you're like, I know he's a Coventry fan and that, but Newcastle, there was a fair amount of them and they were loud that day. So, and it just showed how much it meant to him. And, people would say, it's only the Carabao Cup, but like, it was open top bus parade through Newcastle and it was incredible. Can I talk to you actually about those fans that might not have experienced the greatest days? Now, some of them are huge clubs down at the bottom. I mean, I'm talking about West Ham. Obviously, you mentioned Leeds. Leeds are down there as well. They're currently 16th with 26 points. Like, it is a struggle down there. So the bottom three at the moment are West Ham, Burnley and Wolves. Wolves have only 8 points from 24 games. Like, it's been a horrid season and it looked like they were starting to pick up a bit of form. They lost the last two games, but before that had drawn two and won. But it's a tough slog down the end of that the end of the table, isn't it? How do managers and how do players approach each game? I know they're in survival mode, but if it looks like your race has ran, what way does the next couple of months look for a team?
Yeah, I've been there in that position. I always remember when I was playing at Sunderland when we got relegated reasonably early in the season, and the last few weeks of the season is absolute torture. It is torture, because you're playing for such a big club like Sunderland, like it was when we did get relegated.
Yeah.
It was awful to play. Just the home games, especially. I think across the course of that season, the home games especially are tough going when you have 45,000 that's turning up.
Are they still turning up? Are they coming to each game?
Yeah. They would have been. Particularly Sunderland fans would have been, absolutely would have been turning up for the games, Carl. And I think it's harder playing at home because they are quicker, obviously, to criticise. The away fans, you feel as though that they might give you an extra 20 minutes in a game rather than, get on the team's back within 10 or 15 minutes. You might get till 30, 35 minutes, even till half-time in some cases. But it is a grind. It's a slog. It really is. I think at this stage of the season that they're at now, you mentioned Wolves there. Burnley look like they're in serious trouble as well, don't they? And you look at those sides, Carlo, and you've seen them, and I always look to you. I always look now, maybe more so since I've stepped away from the game and business that's done through that January window, when the club almost accept, right, we're going down here now. We're not going to give the manager any real serious backing. We're not going to go and spend huge money to get players in to keep us in the Premier League. We're accepting we're going down. That filters through to the crowd. So the crowd then have a negative feel towards boards and, you know, the technical staff around the team that's controlling, that has the controlling aspect over the club itself or over the team. And then that filters to the players. The players that start to get it and start to feel it. A bad pass goes missing. Your first touch is not quite right. You start to feel tense before the game's even started. So this stage of the season, especially when everyone's thinking, look, you're looking ahead and you're looking at the fixtures, next five games, geez, we've got three winnable games in here now. We might have teams that surround us. They become even harder, those games. Really? You actually prefer to play against a side that's almost safe or in a comfortable position at the top of the Premier League because you feel as though you've got a shot to nothing at them, and you kind of you play with a bit more freedom. The teams that surround you, both sides are tense, both sets of supporters are tense, so the game doesn't become a great spectacle. And you've probably seen enough of that type of game at the bottom of the Premier League over the years. It's just nerves, and it's a sheer will to win that gets you over the line, usually at the end. And the week after, you might be in a similar sort of scenario against the team that's around you, and you don't come out on top. So it's week to week in the Premier League is so tough anyway when you're in that position, but more so at the bottom. It's you can't get away from it. You're training, you're leaving the training ground, there's supporters there that constantly reminding you, you've got to win this week and you've got to get it back this weekend. And as much as you try and say you stay away from it and you try and, you know, take your focus away from all the external messages or whatever it's going to be that's coming into the group, you can't get away from it. You simply can't, because you're so engrossed. You're working towards a performance at that weekend, whether it's tactically on the training ground, whether it's the technical aspect of, you know, video analysis or whatever it's going to be. And it just builds that tension through the week. And look, I've played enough of that type of game to say simply, I don't miss it, Carl. I don't miss those weeks.
I can imagine.
But there is something special about them as well when you get the result. When you win one of those games, and a 1-0 win, I owe you to say this, a 1-0 win is better than a 5-0 win for team morale after a game. When you haven't played particularly well, but you've just grinded a win, and you can clearly see the goalkeeper's probably had to pull off a couple of saves, you know, last ditch tackle. So the defence are all involved. The strikers are working the balls off up front to try to keep in. So everyone is fully involved in that type of win. That's the sort of thing I always felt that used to breed the togetherness of a side. But it's tough. It is tough going when you're at the bottom. Yeah, it absolutely is.
What would the mood at training be like week to week? Is it still business as usual? Yeah. Like, obviously you can sense it from a manager. If a team is struggling, the manager is struggling, but how much of that is masked? And is there nearly a fake sense of team morale, you know, laughing and joking? Or is it just, you know, you're all in this together?
I think there's a bit of both. That fakeness does come to the fore a little bit as well. You can't get away. Do you know, the psychologists around sport in general, and you'll know this yourself, Carl, like you lose a game, don't be too low. You win a game, don't get too high. But when you're in that position, you can't help but be too high that week in training, because you know what it means. That 3 points could be so vital. I always remember when I was playing for Wigan, Carl, we stayed up by scoring one more goal than Sheffield United. We had to go to Bramall Lane on the last day of the season. Probably the biggest Premier League game I would have played in.
Really, yeah.
Because we knew financially what it meant to a club like Wigan to stay in the Premier League. And all the fuss that week going into the Sheffield United game for us was Carlos Tevez playing for West Ham against Man United, and what was West Ham going to do? And Man United played a second string side against West Ham, so that became the story. For us, we had to go to Bramall Lane, beat them to stay up. It didn't matter how we beat them, because or what scoreline we beat them by, we were always going to stay up by scoring one more goal from them. And we beat them with 10 men. We were down to 10 men after about 60 minutes, I think it was. We beat them 2-1, I think it was. And it was one of those days where it was you know, the perfect storm. The rain was coming down. You made a 10-yard pass. The ball was stopping on the pitch because it was getting, you know, it was that type of day, an amazing day to play in, an amazing occasion that I understand what 3 points or even 1 point can mean to you, even at this stage of the season now, because it can lead to you being able to stay in the Premier League come the end of the season. So one goal matters. You know, 1 point matters, 3 points especially. That's the added bonus for you. But do not lose these games. And if you lose, don't lose by more than two or three, because that's ultimately what can cost you. This is what you start to think about going into the last 10, 15 weeks, or 10, let's say the last 10 weeks of the season, because every game matters so much more.
Yeah, and I can only imagine as a player, like, you've the fear in you, which you try not, as a professional footballer, I would imagine, try not to let seep in. But, you know, you're on the ball, you could be thinking, if I make one mistake here. But, well, I would imagine the relief and the celebrations after a game like that must be something special.
God, we ended up being like, I didn't really go out in Wigan. I didn't really know Wigan too well, to be honest with you. But I think we spent 2 days in Wigan after that game, right. after we came back from Bramall Lane.
Yeah.
I always remember the following day, Paul Jewell was manager. Paul Jewell resigned the following day because it was issues for him. But he decided, look, I've taken the team as far as I can. So he resigned and walked out on us. So I always remember the lads were all blind drunk. They couldn't even see straight. They were trying to look at the manager. Was that the manager at the left-hand side of the room or the right-hand side of the room? And then Paul Jewell is telling us, by the way, lads, I'm resigning. I'm going to leave now. I feel as though I've taken this team as far as we could. And it took 2 days to even register that the manager had left. You know, the manager had gone after the Sheffield United win. So it was, they were great times. They were great times, I have to say. Yeah, looking back. But you mentioned there about the stress and the nervousness, you know, making a mistake that's going to cost your team. Oh God, I always remember what that felt like. And it was, even lads coming in after the game that had made a mistake, and you know, how distraught, like this, like the life had ended when they'd made a mistake. And I probably had that happened a couple of times across my career as well, when you make those big mistakes that really do cost you. But I mean, I don't know. I just going back to that Sheffield United game, I always remember that Sheffield United game, because when we had won that game, it wasn't so much the emotion and the elation immediately. I looked at the Sheffield United boys and I just thought, Jesus, that, you know, if they'd have scored another goal, or if we hadn't scored at that moment, that would have been us in that position. I genuinely felt for a fellow pro in that moment.
Really, yeah.
It just felt so much that, you know, it was absolutely a sliding doors moment, that, because literally one or two things could have changed across the course of that 90 minutes and we'd have been going down to the Championship and not them. I always remember it, and it was, you know, you look back and you think, yeah, amazing times. And it was an incredible win, probably the biggest win. I know Wigan won the FA Cup only a few years after that, but that was probably one of the biggest results ever in Wigan Athletic's history, for a small club to do what they'd done over a period of time to get up to the Premier League. And then to have that moment of staying in the Premier League in such a big game against Sheffield United, that I just felt for the Sheffield United players, because we're all of a similar level. You know, again, one thing that happened differently and we'd have been in their position. It was just, I don't even know how to explain it, Cahill. I mean, they're coming a bit more vivid now and I'm starting to think about it being on the pitch that day. But it was just, I don't know, only thing you say is utter relief. It wasn't even fun to win that game. It was just pure relief off the back of it, you know?
I can only imagine. You have the weight of a club on your shoulders. It must be huge. You mentioned there, you know, how important a point could be for a team and how important 3 points are. And one of your other former managers, David Moyes, did you see this during the week? He Everton obviously pulled off a last-minute equaliser. I think it was Beto who scored against Brighton, 1-0, 97th minute. And your former manager, David Moyes, does a bit of a dance, runs down the sideline, enters the pitch. Here is him speaking after the press conference.
Who wants to see managers getting booked for celebrating? You know what I mean? I mean, I don't think I'd have danced down if the goal was in the 55th minute, you know what I mean? But, you know, it means they've got nothing about them at all. No thoughts about what football means or what it means to the managers, without absolutely just saying, no, you just can't step outside that line or I'm going to boot you. Sad, isn't it? f***ed. You know what I mean?
Do it again.
I bloody will do it again. Actually, I think if I had been a bit more mobile, I might have done a knee slide. You know what I mean? But I don't know, that would have only got me a yellow as well. So I might as well go on the whole hog.
I just love that. Like, I love how his accent is just, it's gotten more Scottish as well.
I've known David Moyes since I was 15, 16 years of age, when I first went into professional football after I'd left school. And he played a huge part in my career. And David Moyes was so intense. Even he was the player... he was the captain, sorry, when I wasn't in the first team at that time, but he was the captain of the club. Mm. Then he became player coach, player assistant manager when I turned pro. So he was my coach and a player at the same time. So he played a huge part in my early development. Then he signed me for Everton a few years later. But with David Moyes, so intense, so like it. He's so different from any other manager I would have played under because he lives and breathes it more than anyone, more than anybody I've probably ever known within the game. Like, coaches and managers will say, look, attention to detail, and they do things in a certain way, and it's almost a prerequisite now that all coaches and managers have to be a certain way. David Moyes was way ahead of his time in terms of attention to detail and things like that. So he lives, breathes it, as I was saying. He's so intense. He's so passionate about the game itself that it means so much to him. So I'm totally within that anyway. Like, how many times have we seen managers and coaches for 20, 30 years sprinting down touchlines and things like this, getting involved in it? And I remember Keith Andrew doing it a few weeks ago as well for Brentford, sprinting down the touchline, getting involved in the celebration. For referees to penalise that sort of thing, even penalise players for taking jerseys off and things like this, it has to change, because I can't explain to you what that type of moment actually means to the... It's not just David Moyes that's celebrating. He's celebrating for his players, he's celebrating for his coaching staff, for the whole stadium that's there in front of him, for the whole pressure that's been built on him to build something there at Everton. That's what he's celebrating for. It's... Going back to the point before, it's like a relief. It's not. It's actually, it's de-stressing him that. That's what it is. You're not in control of it. You know, how many times have you seen lads when they get, you know, say they're on a yellow card, take the jersey off when they get, and they get a second yellow card. What's he thinking? You're not thinking. You don't know. You don't know what you're doing when those moments happen. So it is a killjoy. And I think the authorities have really got to get hold of that type of thing to think, look, we have enough now with VAR that can kill a goal for us, can't we? We're still waiting 2 or 3 minutes after a goal is scored sometimes to see whether it's an actual goal or not. So they're killing the moment anyway. So they're trying to kill a manager's moment if he's dancing up and down the touchline. I mean, come on, it's ridiculous, isn't it? It is ridiculous.
Because that's the magic of it, isn't it? And that's the magic of a stadium erupting and the team going over to the fans and the fans up standing up on the hoarders and the advertisement boards and like that. And it's like, they're the scenes you want in football. And as you said, a lot of that is being kind of sanitised now and taken away from the game. And it's a tricky one with referees, because there's the letter of the law, but there's also... Your common sense, and like they're football people.
I think
as well,
Carl. Yeah, just to look at that one there with the letter of the law and things like that. The law's got to change, hasn't it? I think we all just change the law. There's so many of these stupid laws that have come in the last whatever since I first started playing. Some laws that you look at sometimes, you could just change the law. Don't put the referee in a position that he's got to. You know, to play to the rules of the game. I know what you're saying there, common sense absolutely has to come into it as well. But just change it. Make the referee's life a little bit easier by changing it in the first place.
Just a thought there has come to my mind, I'm putting you on the spot, but who was your favourite manager? Who was the best manager you ever played for?
David Moyes. David Moyes. I love Mick McCarthy as well. Brian Kerr would be another one who I loved and, you know, really admired playing under. And coach-wise, I was lucky to have Ray Harford when I first went to West Brom. Played with some, honestly, some really good coaches and managers, but for everything, the complete package, yeah, David Moyes, absolutely, yeah.
And the fans seem to love him as well. He's one of those great stories where he returned to the club and it's all good, yeah. Because I think we were talking about it before, about a manager going back to a club they've already been at and how sometimes, you know, it mightn't be the greatest idea. I think we were talking about it around the time of Ole, and was he going to get the job instead of Michael Carrick? But it seems, you know, I don't know why, but you kind of sometimes feel happy for David Moyes. Maybe it's because of the way the whole United thing turned out all those years ago. But I mean, look at it now. You know, it didn't work out for anyone. So, you know, I think his reputation wasn't tarnished too much in the end from that time. Is a great help.
I think
there.
Sunderland was another thing as well. That Sunderland maybe tarnished him a little bit as well. Yeah. But again, unjustifiably, because of the position that the club. You know, the club was almost being just let go. The owners of the club didn't seem to care too much about it. They put David Moyes in place just to control everything. And it did. I think that took a huge toll on him as well when he was manager of such a big club like that as well. But he managed to reinvent himself. He did a great job at West Ham. And I'm so happy he's back at Everton. I'm so happy that he's able to, you know, he was able to take the club to the new stadium and fully fulfill what he started 20 years ago, I suppose, as well. So he's doing a very, very good job, excellent job there. And hopefully in the next few years, Everton can start to get to the position that they were maybe when he was first around, top six, and maybe pushing for top four at some stage. Because I think that's where the Evertonians want to be. I think that's where they feel as though I'd be hopeful that Everton could do that. The amount of investment that went in the last 10 or 15 years wasn't money well spent. I think most Evertonians or virtually every Evertonian would accept that. Now it feels as though that we're on the right path. I feel that anyway. And I feel as though that the club is moving in the right direction. Yeah.
Kevin, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I hope you've had a good birthday week now. No more celebrations, and you enjoy another good weekend of football. The biggest game this weekend, I suppose, is City and Liverpool, 2 p.m. on Sunday. Yeah. What do you think? It's the big one this weekend anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, Liverpool have consistently been getting or gradually getting better in the last month or two, haven't they? Just been starting to get the results. Certainly in Champions League, they've been producing as well. I think City, we spoke a few weeks ago about maybe that inconsistency. You kind of don't really know what you're going to get from City at the moment, do you? That's the thing. And I suppose the same is for Liverpool. So, you know, I still feel that City are the most likely to topple Arsenal if any team's going to do it. And if City are going to do that, they have to win this game, because I feel as though that Arsenal can build a gap. Once they're into March and they've got a 10-point gap or 9-point gap, probably not going to get back from that. So they've got to win this game, I feel, City this weekend. And I don't know. Carl. Who's at home again? Sorry.
City at home, yeah.
Yeah. I probably maybe City just advanced. I'm going to go with City. I think City will win it.
And at the other side, you have United and Tottenham playing. Will Carrick make it four in a row? Will that guy, have you seen that guy with his hair, that's grown his hair out until Manchester United win five games in a row? He's close. He's two away.
he's been close a few times though, hasn't he? He's probably got it this time. He's seriously looking into it. Tottenham have been a bit of a bogey team for United, haven't they though? They seem to, you know, in the last 10 years, more so than before that, they seem to be getting results against United now.
And they had a good week there. They had a good week if you think about the draw with City and in the Champions League as well. What do you think?
Yeah, I know. I think I've liked watching United the last few weeks. I saw the City and Arsenal games, really enjoyed watching them. You know, for them to get that result as well against Fulham when it looked as though that they weren't going to win, you know, to do it again with late goals, there's obviously a good feeling around the place. So obviously United favourites the position that they're in, but I'd probably back that up and say, yeah, I think they might have too much for Tottenham right now. Yeah,
right. There you go. You're the expert. You'll know. You know.
No, well, no. I'd say you know more than me. What do you think? What do you think?
Oh no, hey, no. I'm no expert here. I'll say whatever you say. I like to sit on the fence. I like to sit on the fence every single day. Right. Go on. That's
all right.
Always a pleasure talking to you, Kev.
Good man.
Mind yourself.
Thanks, Carl.
We'll talk
I appreciate
again.
It. Thank you.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.